Welcome to the Directions on Microsoft Briefing podcast. I am Mary Jo Foley, the Editor-in-Chief here at Directions. I'm your host for this series of podcasts designed for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem. The Directions on Microsoft Briefing brings you the best insights from the best independent Microsoft watching firm in the business, Directions on Microsoft. Directions is an independent IT planning, information, and advisory service focused exclusively on Microsoft Enterprise software and services that's based in Kirkland, Washington. Today's Directions on Microsoft Briefing is all about how Microsoft product licensing and packaging rules and policies have changed over the past decade and what that portends for the future. This insight from our analysts comes from over 10 years of Directions licensing bootcamps. For those unfamiliar with the Directions on Microsoft licensing bootcamps, these in-depth, in-person, and virtual courses offer the most up-to-date Microsoft licensing training out there. They're helpful whether you're new to licensing or an old hat needing to refresh your knowledge. My guests today, Directions on Microsoft's Rob Horowitz and Wes Miller, have taught these boot camps in cities all over the world. Hi, Wes. Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Mary Jo, for having us.
Morning, Mary Jo.
Good morning. Okay, so you guys have been covering licensing for lots of decades here, at least two plus, right? Way before I came to Microsoft, Directions on Microsoft. So, Rob, I wanted to introduce as the co-founder of Directions on Microsoft. He analyzes and writes about Microsoft programs and policies for our firm. Before he joined Directions on Microsoft in 1992, Rob spent 8 years at Microsoft in a variety of software development and technical marketing roles. He was a software developer on the first version of Macintosh Word and marketed Microsoft operating system and server-based products while he was in the developer relations, network product marketing, international, and OEM marketing groups. Wes Miller, in addition to helping lead our licensing boot camps, covers identity management, systems management, and security at Directions. Before joining Directions on Microsoft, Wes was a product manager and development manager for several Austin, Texas startups, including Winternal Software, acquired by Microsoft in 2006. Prior to that, Wes spent 7 years at Microsoft working as a program manager in the Windows Core operating system and MSN divisions. Okay, you two, after working with hundreds of enterprise customers over the past 10 years, I'm sure you both have found some things have stayed relatively the same in the Microsoft licensing world, and some have changed fairly radically. So let's start out by talking about some of the licensing constraints that you two have seen. When we were preparing for this podcast, you both mentioned Microsoft commercial customers can count on constant change when it comes to naming, packaging, pricing, and the rules. So what's the impact on organizations as a result of this constant change treadmill?
Well, first, I'd like to say that some of the things have not changed, and that is things like Microsoft continually expands into a broader and broader set of IT areas. Mm-hmm. So as a consequence of that, Microsoft is going to continue to try to sell you more and in Microsoft speak, provide you with more value. So over time, you're becoming more and more dependent on Microsoft for pretty much everything IT. Wes, mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add?
No, I think that really nails it, because just over time, like you said, these keep expanding in terms of what Microsoft covers, just from the security perspective. I mean, we've seen this grow and grow to cover, you know, dozens of products.
So as Microsoft, you asked about what's the same, consistent with the past. Well, consistent with the past is a constant expansion of product offerings, and consistent in the path is a method by which they sell you on that consistently expanding set of offerings, how Microsoft, quote, moves you forward, for example, from the old to new, or from your current product level, subscription level, to something more expansive. In today's universe, we talk about moving from an E3 Microsoft 365 suite to an E5. Well, some of the things that Microsoft is doing to move you from the old to the new is really old hat. It's very similar to the types of things that Microsoft has done for a decade plus. For example, what's their general strategy for moving you to the more expansive offerings and the new and latest and greatest things? Well, I'd say it's probably threefold if you wanted to simplify it. First is make it more uncomfortable for customers to live with the old stuff or the stuff where you're at now. So for example, they'll raise prices. They'll cease expanding the functionality that they're adding to the product. We've seen that with Microsoft 365 E3. They'll limit how product interfaces support new technologies. So for example, yeah, they'll still have the product on the quote life cycle that they committed to, but they won't be adding compatibility with other technologies. For example, your ability to use Office Professional Plus, the old rendition of Office Suites, deteriorates with time. You can't use it with the Microsoft 365 backend for all that much longer. And then the second thing that they do is they make the new destination where they want you to move to more attractive. So how do they do that? Well, that's the place where they continually expand the set of technical capabilities. That's where they focus all their efforts on their innovation, okay? They also might provide some special investment funds for customers to work with partners to help them to move the technology forward. And the third kind of pillar of their general strategy for moving you to the existing to the future is to grease the transition. So they'll have special programs. So for the next year, you can get this is available only for this time to move you from the old to the new. Or maybe they're more willing to discount products during that time period where people are getting started. You'll get a better deal to move to the next to the new thing, at least for your first trip on the merry-go-round. Maybe not so much when you renew, but
right, okay. So let's go on to another place where you both told me it was kind of a constant over the years that you've done the boot camps, and that's when it comes to complexity around licensing. So every year I have heard Microsoft officials say, all right, we finally simplified the licensing, the contracts are shorter, they're more understandable. But then I look at them and I'm like, did they? It looks the same to me. What do you say about that, Wes?
Well, I go back to a story with Rob and I teaching at a boot camp over 10 years ago where Microsoft was doing exactly that, focusing on, hey, we're going to simplify licensing. And a customer asked us, how could you find your purpose if Microsoft's going to simplify licensing? And Rob and I were basically, well, we'll worry about that when we get to it. And I think when you look at what stayed the same, the reality is that they've stayed the same in terms of the basic thesis, the basic path that they go down, which is the initial product suite stays the same. They add a new one. The new one, they're nurtured, and then the next one will replace that. And so you sort of see the old one stagnate, new features arrive in the new one, and they'll use those same vehicles that Rob talked about earlier that have stayed the same as the driver. The difference is the on-prem products came at a very, much more relaxed cadence, and we're seeing pretty aggressive addition and dropping of focus with new suites now with services than you ever could have seen on-prem. We have SQL Server Standard, SQL Server Enterprise, and Windows Server and Data Center versus Standard. And we had this conversation in our last podcast, Mary Jo, discussing the focus of Microsoft wants to drive you one way, and they do that with a mix and pricing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the licensing, it never gets any simpler. It just gets different. And arguably for every simplification step they might take forward, I'd argue there's at least two complexity steps backward. And I think that's just inevitable for a variety of reasons, including the fact that Microsoft, the product set continues to expand. And it has just not, you have to have different models to make money off different kinds of products. It just works differently. So that I think underlying movement towards more and more IT products is going to increase the complexity. And then every time you make a change to, quote, simplify licensing, well, you've now added the complexity of all the transition issues you've created from moving right. to the old to the new. So to say it's simpler is not looking at the broader picture of the complexity of all the transition type stuff. And we've seen that happen with on-premises to the cloud, all the weird SKUs, product licenses that Microsoft had to offer while people were straddling old world like Office Professional Plus and new world Office 365 or Microsoft 365 for an interim period. It got really, really crazy with a whole bunch of bizarre sounding products that just made it all work.
Yeah, I remember that all too well, trying to write about that and being like, wait, am I covering the right thing? Does this have a different name than it used to, or is it the same thing? I don't know. So yeah, keeping track of that is definitely a full-time job. Okay, you both also mentioned that you found that big companies still need to negotiate exceptions in their licensing agreements in order to survive. When we were talking about this, Rob said, Microsoft contracts are not just a Mad Libs thing where you simply fill in the blanks. And if you don't know what Mad Libs are, you need to find out, because I can tell you, when we were kids, this game kept us going in the car forever. It's just like a fill in the blank thing. So-and-so did blank, you did blank with so-and-so. And it's very entertaining, but not so much when it comes to licensing agreements, right?
We're dating ourselves.
We Mary are.
Jo. So negotiating exceptions. So at the boot camp, a licensing boot camp that we do, we have an entire two-hour presentation about Microsoft's contract stack, because the contracts are actually the deal you have with Microsoft. Enterprise agreements are actually a whole bunch of different documents bundled together. And we cover what each document covers and the potential exceptions that you could conceivably negotiate with Microsoft. And sometimes these are called amendments or concessions. So when we say exceptions, amendments, concessions, we mean pretty much the same thing. And there's a lot of things you could conceivably ask for. And when I say ask for, I don't mean you'll get them. You could ask for them and you'll get, you know, maybe some of them. Mm-hmm. So they generally, in order to survive, people ask for concessions, exceptions, or whatever in a few different areas. Like, for example, maybe you want to modify a current rule to save some money. So, for example, Microsoft has a special waiver for on-premises Exchange server, SharePoint server, Skype server products, that if you're a Microsoft 365 customer, you get to use those without having to cover software assurance on the servers. Well, The waiver has it's pretty stringent. It sounds good, but you may not qualify in certain circumstances, and you might realize that ahead of time and you want to modify it so you do qualify, so you save, I don't know, $100,000 if you're a large company. And it's, you know, it's not a huge amount, but in the context of a huge agreement, but these types of things can add up. Or, for example, you want a more favorable exchange rate for your Azure hybrid benefits for Windows Server than what Microsoft is offering. That's possible to negotiate as well. Okay. Then the second, after modifying a current rule, there are a lot of things about the contracts that are potentially murky, and you want to, they're not written in a way that's really clear, and you want to limit the possibility of future, shall we say, adverse interpretations, that all of a sudden what you thought something meant 2 years from now, Microsoft asserts it actually means something different. And this, a good example of this is the frontline worker licenses for Microsoft 365 actually have a bunch of purchase prerequisites that are pretty unclear, shall we say. So maybe you want to have a agreement, a exception, amendment, concession, whatever you want to call it, as part of your contract to clearly state that what you're trying to do here qualifies, meets Microsoft's eligibility requirements. So Microsoft can't assert in the next contract, oh, by the way, all those people you were buying frontline worker licenses for, you now have to buy the enterprise licenses, which are far more expensive. Or maybe you want to protect from a third category, could be protecting from a future change, like the Azure Hybrid Benefit for Windows Server. It's a great deal today, so for software assurance customers. However, nowhere is it written that Microsoft has to make Azure Hybrid Benefit available in perpetuity. They could pretty much cancel it any time. Well, maybe you're depending on it. Maybe you want to have some sort of amendment that assures for a certain period, at least, that that benefit will be durable. And another, the last example I'll use is to limit your attack surface. So you have, there's something about the Microsoft contract that, you know, I don't know what Microsoft, how Microsoft might use this against me in the future. I want to place some limitations. And a prime example is Microsoft's right to verify what customers would know as audit you. Then maybe you want to put some preconditions on that, or you want to have the option to do an internal audit yourself. Or maybe you assert that, okay, it can only happen in the second year of my enterprise agreement because it would be too disruptive at other times, or in certain months, you would, your business gets crazy busy. You don't want to have to, it ever happen then. Those are types of things that you can conceivably negotiate with Microsoft.
You know what I'm going to be interested to see on this front is what happens with Copilot, all these Copilots, right? We don't know as of the recording of this podcast exactly what's going to trigger somebody's need for a Copilot license, but I'm guessing that is going to fall into the murky category at first and then be something people get unpleasantly surprised about later.
Always a possibility.
I also wanted to ask you about license compliance. I was at the Atlanta boot camp earlier this year, and I heard you guys mention that it's still not built into Microsoft contracts, and it likely won't be. So should enterprise customers assume this is going to just be the way it is, as it has been for the past 10 years? And why?
Okay, I should be clear. You said built into Microsoft contracts. I'd say built into Microsoft products. So okay. You think, most customers think, and it's logical, well, all this stuff in the cloud, well, all the code is in Microsoft's hands. All the execution and deployment and execution of the code is in Microsoft's responsibility. Why wouldn't it have built-in compliance to keep you on the licensing rails? How is it possible that I could use some technology up running in Microsoft's data center in a way that is not compliant with the licenses that I purchased? And it's a very rational, yeah, why is that? Well, the fact is that a lot of Microsoft components running in the cloud, especially with Microsoft 365 components, only some of them have compliance built in. So you can't use the product non-compliantly. Like if you don't have a license for Power BI Pro, you can't use Power BI Pro. You can't access the reports. But makes only sense. Some have it built in. Others, especially in the security and compliance space, which is Wes's territory, don't have compliance built in. And up until pretty recently, enforcing compliance for Microsoft 365, it's been pretty lax. So even in the places where it's not licensing gating or whatever is not built in, Microsoft hasn't audited people. Until recently, we started to see it more and more. And this is, I just want to say, it's very typical for Microsoft when it's in the evangelism phase, whether you want to call it early adoption, early deployment phase, like Microsoft has been doing for some time for Microsoft 365. Microsoft tends to look the other way for compliance, right? Because it's just trying to get people to use it. And then the compliance object, the compliance focus, comes later on when the products become more entrenched as they are now. And Wes can speak to the case where this theoretical issue of compliance with Microsoft 365 became real from some customer feedback. Wes?
Right. Yeah, there's two cases that actually happened at the same boot camp a few years ago where it was all around Azure Active Directory Premium P2, now Entra ID2, IDP2. And what happened for both of these customers was they had gone ahead and deployed things that were features of the P1, the lowest paid tier of a premium at that time that most customers would have used. Now it's the lowest paid tier, period. And a lot of them had deployed that, but they began turning on some features that were premium P2 features. This is really common with identity protection. And unfortunately, it's easy to walk into it. And because the enforcement isn't built into it like that, as Rob noted, with most of the security, identity, compliance, unfortunately, the most important parts of the product suite for customers are the ones with the worst license enforcement. And so as we were able to winnow it down, these two distinct customers, one of them was able to work out something with Microsoft where they unwound it. Apparently, they'd only begun dabbling in it, and so they were able to stop using it. The other one basically had to move to premium P2 for everybody. So there's good and bad. And to Rob's point, too, I would add the fact that license enforcement, if we take Microsoft Defender for endpoints, so the endpoint detection and response that Microsoft has, that came out first as it was antivirus, then it became the EDR tool, no license enforcement. Then they added the lower tier premium P1 or plan one, and also no license enforcement. And only now, after it's been out for over a year, they're actually building in license enforcement, and it is really, really kludgy. So the burden's on customers, and they'll have to learn how to do this thing to stay above board because Microsoft actually knowingly hasn't built proper license enforcement into it.
Okay. And the first places this will show up would be for customers who mix different levels of Microsoft 365 in the same tenancy. And Microsoft will argue that everyone needs the highest level suite that you've purchased. So you couldn't just purchase the E5 for a few people. It has to be for everyone. And then the second place that this more greater scrutiny with license compliance will likely take place is anything related to E3. It's as part of the mixing issue, really, is that Microsoft is going to use compliance as a way to push you towards a higher level suite. Right. Use it as a vehicle from E3 to E5.
All right, on that note, let's take a quick break so I can talk a little bit more about what we do here at Directions on Microsoft. First, in spite of our name, we are not affiliated with Microsoft. We provide product, strategy, and licensing information about Microsoft Enterprise products. We have roadmaps for on-premises software, Microsoft 365, and Azure services. We offer regularly updated reports, evaluation guides, and monthly webinars. We run our world-famous Microsoft licensing boot camps, which we've been talking a lot about on this episode, that are aiming to help customers new to licensing get up to speed and old hats to refresh their knowledge about Microsoft licensing. And we deliver advisory services such as EA negotiation support and Microsoft strategy assessments, where we help you one-on-one with your specific Microsoft product questions and licensing issues. Go to directionsonmicrosoft.com or email info@directionsonmicrosoft.com to reach a directions representative to learn more about all the services that we offer. Okay, up till now, we've been talking about the constants that you two have seen during the 10 years that you've been leading the licensing boot camps. Now let's talk about some of the things that have changed. So first up, let's talk about subscriptions. Before, customers could just buy software assurance and keep scripting, but that's no longer true, right?
Yeah, the whole model has changed. Whereas the old school was buy an on-premises product and then have the subscription add-on cost called software assurance that mainly gave you new version rights, and you continue with software assurance for a long time, but you could have the option to drop it if you wanted to, and you still own the underlying software, or at least the right to use the software indefinitely, though indefinitely is not really true, because it's from a practical sense, for as long as a product would be supported. So you could drop off Microsoft's radar for a while, or at least use that as a potential negotiating lever for, you know, get better price and things or of that sort with during negotiations. But that's no longer true. You need to continue with the subscription forever once you start on any of these products, because it will literally shut off if you do not pay. So that certainly changed. And then another thing that's really changed is with way Microsoft is delivering technology is, I guess, unbundling, I'd call it, or we call it unbundling, or batteries not included, or some people would call it getting nickeled and dimed. Microsoft is trying to sell you a suite, Microsoft 365 E3 and E5, for example, and then a whole bunch of these extras. They don't include it inside the suite. In our licensing boot camp, we have this big slide of these batteries not included type licenses. And it started out when we first noticed this trend and we first documented in the boot camp, it was under a dozen extra things you might buy to supplement your Microsoft 365 suite. And now it's up to about four dozen. It's mind-boggling. And some of these could be very consequential from a cost perspective, especially the special Power Apps and Power Automate licenses.
I feel like I remember going to a workshop you guys did several years back where you were talking about batteries not included, but that was something I was like, oh, that makes sense. That metaphor really works. And now with Microsoft's whole campaign in the past year or two around do more with less, I feel like what they really mean is do more by using more add-ons. And it's not really even paying less. It's just giving you that illusion that, hey, you're not on E7, so you're good, right?
In some ways, I almost think that phrase is like it's endearing to the next suite. You know, it's because it's basically saying it's going to cost all this if you buy all these batteries, but eventually it will cost you less because you'll buy that next suite, because that's the only way that you pay less pay less and get more is eventually they bundle it and you get moved the same way Rob was talking about early on towards that one through pricing changes and feature deflation. So
we wouldn't be surprised if some of these batteries not included ended up as special features in Microsoft 365 E7, which doesn't exist yet. But Wes and I banter around trying to predict exactly when this would E7 will be introduced. And that's probably, and I think some of the markers are there, including the fact that fewer and fewer things get added to Microsoft 365 E5 and instead go into these batteries not included offerings, which to us is a sign that it's inevitable that Microsoft will try to create a higher level SKU for customers. Especially
we're going to do a date pool on when will E7 arrive.
I won the one on Xbox or Linux on the Xbox, so I think I can pull this one off too. We'll see.
Okay, let's also talk about on-premises a bit. So parking on an on-premises product is really not as feasible as it used to be. Increasingly, you're on a subscription model, as we mentioned, even when you're using an, quote, on-prem product. See SharePoint Server Subscription Edition, which mandates a subscription to get security and feature updates, as just one example. So here's a loaded question for you two. Is on-prem effectively dead?
Wes, you want to handle that one? Or?
Sure.
It's a hot potato. Go ahead.
You know, again, fitting given the conversation we had just a little bit ago, Mary Jo. But,
right.
You know, I think the reality is, you know, it depends. As we like to say at the licensing bootcamp, it depends. Everything depends. But it's really, it depends on what you mean by on-prem. Is this software that can run on-prem, you know, doesn't require a connection, that sort of thing? So maybe if there's a perpetual license, you might be able to park. But just like you and I talked about last time, some things are getting tied into software assurance as far as features. So more and more, you're losing that ability to sit still. And in terms of you know, being unplugged, not having to connect to the cloud. Sure. And I think particularly for when we talked about SQL Server and Windows Server, or Windows Server in particular, that's the case. Although even those two products are beginning to creep towards cloud connectedness. But I think for right now, at least for, you know, one more go round of the carousel, as we sometimes say, it might be possible to sit still on-prem, but customers are just going to find it harder and harder to evade paying a subscription for most everything. Rob?
Yeah, I think on-premises software, especially server software, can be a good analogy would be large household appliances. Well, there's very few household appliances that are manual, as in not connected to anything. All your household appliances are plugged in. They're plugged into the wall. They're electric. The same thing with the on-premises products, especially the latest additions, like the subscription edition of SharePoint. They'll have to be plugged in. Plugged into what? Microsoft's cloud. So maybe you could disconnect it temporarily from Microsoft's cloud, but it really relies on for continued operation. It relies on that connectivity. So it's you could call it on premises, but it's the same. It's not the same as the past, where you could have the server running on a spaceship somewhere and it had everything it needed to operate. It didn't have to connect to anything outside, okay, at least conceptually. Well, now it will.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Another thing to talk about when we're talking about subscriptions is how they impact your dependence on Microsoft. So the more subscriptions you have, the less able you are to just stop paying and walk away, because all your data and all your users are dependent on Microsoft 365 or Intune or SQL Server. So I'm curious if you think enterprise customers are more locked in than they used to be. I'm guessing yes, but I would love to hear what you both think on that.
Absolutely. Rob? Yeah. Your dependency on the cloud for many customers, it's huge. So Microsoft, the kind of products that Microsoft offers, if I were to compare it to the human body, it's kind of like your circulatory system. It's everywhere in your organization. You can't shut it off and survive. And you can't, it's not easy, it's not practical to do a technology transplant. So if we were just talking about a database, well, conceivably you'd have some leeway negotiating position, or at least a threat that we'll move to a different database technology. But the fact that Microsoft's offerings are everywhere, you really don't have that. You'd have to build a parallel infrastructure, a parallel body, while maintaining the existing Microsoft infrastructure. That's what you'd have to do if you ever wanted to have a credible way of moving off Microsoft. So you are hugely dependent on Microsoft. So that's it's a really important point. And I think it's the level of dependency is so large that I maintain if a company had the choice, if there were a tight spot with cash and they were late on payments, let's say tax payments to the government or payments to Microsoft, they might elect to pay Microsoft first, because that would their business would cease to exist faster by not doing that with Microsoft than not paying the government. So it's the level of dependency is huge, and it really has to be factored into your negotiations or your thought process. And we go into that, and at least Dean Bedwell does at our licensing boot camps, in great detail about how can you manage that power dynamic? How do you maintain some leverage in the face of such potential, or for most people, reality of monumental dependency on Microsoft.
Right. That's what always makes me wonder when I hear people saying, well, you can just threaten Microsoft and say, I'm just going to go to Google, or I'm just going to go to AWS. It's not that easy to just say, all right, dropping Azure, going to AWS, right? It's, I don't know, is it an idle threat? It almost feels like one in a way.
Yeah, you have to have a strategy to make it less likely that you'll be treated by Microsoft as someone who's completely dependent. So we go we talk a lot about that again at the boot camp. So some of the things, not to get ahead of ourselves, and it's probably a good topic for a podcast in itself, mm-hmm. but the importance, for example, of controlling communication with Microsoft. So if everyone, for example, if everyone or some people are super excited about some technology and communicate to Microsoft that the company's super excited about this particular technology and plans to implement it, it's kind of hard to negotiate a good price for it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, I really want that coat or that new car, and right. and it's the only one you have, and it's low, whatever, and you're not going to get a really good price. You also want to do things like, or at least think about pacing your technology investment instead of just going off and making great leaps at distinct points in time. Maybe you want to feed the Microsoft beast gradually, and so they could sort of meet their internal expectations for sales of the salespeople. So they're happy there. Maybe they're more likely to give you better discounts because you're helping them to meet their own internal objectives. But you don't adopt some new technology all at once, and then the next time around, once you're dependent, get a horrible price or just not able to negotiate anything because now you're dependent, even more dependent. You might want to use some third-party technology in a few areas, maybe Slack, for example. You might want to use that just to maintain some, at least, illusion that you're somewhat independent, that you're not completely beholden to Microsoft. You probably want to split workloads over between Azure and Amazon, for example, and Google maybe, so you're not completely dependent on one cloud provider. And yes, I acknowledge that some of these strategies, they have other downsides. For example, the minute you start having multiple vendors, you have, for some of these technologies, you introduce the effort you have to have to integrate those multiple vendor technologies. So it's a great big balancing act, but it may well be worth it from the negotiating perspective.
All right. Well, thank you both. Very interesting conversation. And listeners, if you have not attended one of these Directions on Microsoft Licensing boot camps, you really should. Navigating the Microsoft licensing waters is not easy, as you have heard today. So thanks again, Rob and Wes.
Thank you, Mary Jo.
Thanks.
To close, I would like to remind our audience that they can find lots more coverage of all things Microsoft related on directionsonmicrosoft.com. Thanks for listening. If you have questions, comments, or any topics that you would like to hear the Directions analysts cover in one of these podcasts, please do not hesitate to contact me via Twitter at Mary Jo Foley. Or should I say at X? I don't know. We are doing these podcasts twice monthly now, so we would love to get your input on what you would like to hear the Directions analysts cover. Speaking of Twitter, we at Directions are converging our existing channels into a single new platform. Give us a follow at DirectionsMSFT on Twitter for all the latest Microsoft Enterprise product and licensing information. Thank you very much.